The heavy rhythmic shift of the deadbolt is the first thing you hear, three mechanical clicks that vibrate through the floorboards of the foyer. Marcus is still in the shower upstairs. The hum of the pipes in the wall behind the refrigerator is a dull, constant drone. I do not turn around from the kitchen island. I continue to slice the grapefruit. The serrated blade breaks through the thick, pithy skin with a wet, tearing sound. The smell of citrus is sharp enough to sting the back of my throat. I hear the weight of the front door closing, a soft puff of air as the weather stripping seals the house. Then the sound of leather loafers on the hardwood. He does not knock. He does not call out. He simply walks into the kitchen and places a folder on the marble countertop, exactly 3 inches from my hand. The marble is cold. It is always cold, even when the thermostat is locked at 72. He pulls out a chair and sits. He doesn't take off his coat. It is a charcoal wool blend, heavy and smelling of cedar and rain. He reaches for a section of the grapefruit I have already sliced and puts it in his mouth. He chews slowly. I watch the serrated knife. It is stainless steel, reflecting the surgical white light from the recessed ceiling fixtures. He swallows and points to the folder. The paper is heavy, ivory colored, the kind of stationery used for birth certificates or death warrants. He says the interest rates are shifting. He says the mortgage he is carrying for us needs to be balanced by a more stable domestic contribution. He says my commute is a drain on the household's biological resources. He uses the word biological. I look at the grapefruit. There are 12 slices. I focus on the wedding ring on my left hand. It is a 3-carat princess cut. It was his mother's. When he gave it to Marcus to give to me, he had it cleaned until the platinum looked like liquid. Now, under the kitchen lights, I see a small smudge on the side of the main stone, a fingerprint. It is not mine. I have not touched the stone today. I spent the morning scrub brushing the grout in the guest bathroom because he mentioned it looked neglected during his visit yesterday at 2 p.m. I was not home at 2 p.m. yesterday. I was in a board meeting downtown. He had used his key while I was working. He had walked through my house, looked at my floors, and decided they were a reflection of my character. The smudge on the ring catches the light, a tiny, dull blur against the fire of the diamond. It sits there, an unexplained mark on a perfect surface, a signature left in my absence. The logic is sound. That is the thing about a gift that costs $500,000. It comes with its own internal math. If I quit the firm downtown and take the position he has carved out for me at his consultancy, my commute drops from 45 minutes to 6. The salary is technically higher, though the bonus structure is tied to family milestones. He explains this while sipping the coffee Marcus made for him. Marcus did not ask why his father was in our kitchen at 7 a.m. on a Tuesday. Marcus just asked if he wanted a refill. I am staying because the alternative is a debt we cannot service. If we move out, we lose the equity he promised to gift us in 5 years. If I stay, I am the daughter-in-law of the year. If I stay, the house remains ours, or rather, it remains his, and he lets us sleep in the master suite. I am staying because I have been told that building a legacy requires a period of alignment. It makes sense when he says it. He has lived longer. He has more. He must know how the world works. The clinical reality of the folder on the counter is undeniable. Page 4, Section 2, Asset Management and Household Stability. It is a contract disguised as a suggestion. In forensic terms, this is a vertical integration of a human life. By controlling the housing, the income, and the transportation, the manipulator creates a closed-loop system where the victim's only external contact is mediated by the controller. My professional certifications are listed under non-essential liabilities. My retirement account is flagged for consolidation. This is not a conversation. It is an audit. He is calculating the depreciation of my autonomy in real time. He stands up and walks over to the sink. He washes his hands, drying them on the linen towel I bought last week. He hangs the towel back up, but he does not align it with the oven handle. It hangs crooked. I do not move. He walks behind me and places a hand on my shoulder. His palm is warm. The weight of it is significant, pressing the fabric of my silk robe into my skin. He tells me he has already called my boss. He told them I would be submitting my resignation by noon. He says it was a family decision. He squeezes my shoulder once, then lets go. The space where his hand was feels cold immediately. He walks to the front door. The deadbolt clicks again. 1, 2, 3. At 10:15 a.m., the doorbell rings. It is a delivery, a set of nursery furniture. I did not order it. I have not even told Marcus I am off the pill yet. But the delivery driver has a manifest signed by my father-in-law. The furniture is heavy, dark oak. It smells of varnish and old forests. They carry it into the room we currently use as my home office. They move my desk into the hallway. They move my professional certifications into the closet. They set up the crib in the center of the room. The slats are narrow. I stand in the doorway and watch them. One of the men asks where I want the rocking chair. I point to the corner. He nods and places it there. It is a perfect fit. It looks like it has always been there. Why am I standing here watching them dismantle my office? Because the floor is marble, and the windows are floor to ceiling, and the neighborhood is gated. You are probably judging me for not screaming, but look around your own room. Who paid for your phone? Who signed the lease on your apartment? If they walked in right now and told you to sit down, would you fight or would you calculate the cost of the bridge you're about to burn? I am staying because I am a pragmatist. I am playing the long game. I am letting him win the battle so I can win the war. That is what I tell myself as the delivery men carry my career out into the hallway in cardboard boxes. It is a rational choice. It has to be. The smudge on the diamond is still there. I try to rub it off with the edge of my robe, but it will not budge. I realize it is not on the outside. It is a flaw inside the stone, an inclusion. It has been there since the diamond was formed deep in the earth under immense pressure. You cannot clean it away. You can only ignore it or sell the ring. And I cannot sell the ring. It is a family heirloom. It is part of the legacy. When Marcus comes home, he sees the nursery. He does not look surprised. He looks relieved. He hugs me, and for a second, I feel like I am breathing through a straw. He says his father told him the good news. He says he is glad I am finally settling in. He uses that phrase, settling in, like sediment at the bottom of a lake, like dust on a bookshelf. He does not ask how I feel about the job. He asks what is for dinner. His father is coming over at 6 to discuss the reinvestment strategy for my 401k. He is going to manage it for me now, to save me the stress of the market volatility. The kitchen is a chamber of sensory inputs. The roast in the oven is browning. The fat is rendered and spitting against the roasting pan, a sound like small, sharp cracks of electricity. The rosemary is pungent, earthy, nearly medicinal. The oven light casts a dull orange glow over the floor. I hear the deadbolt. Click, click, click. He is here. He walks into the kitchen and looks at the roast. He says it needs more rosemary. He reaches into the cabinet, the one where I keep the spices, and pulls out a jar. He does not ask where it is. He knows he is the one who organized the cabinets while I was at my final interview 3 months ago. He says he is glad I signed the papers. He says he saw the notification in his inbox. He calls me daughter. He has never used my name, not once. He calls me daughter or the girl. The dinner is quiet. The only sound is the clink of silver on china. The china was a wedding gift from him too. Gold-rimmed, heavy. If you drop it, it will not break. It will just dent the floor. He talks about the company. He talks about the new direction I will be taking. He says I will be in charge of the philanthropy arm. It is a way to ensure I am always dressed in the clothes he approves of, standing in the rooms he owns. I am an asset with a high depreciation rate, if not properly maintained. He finishes his wine. He stands up and looks at me. He tells me I should wear my hair back tomorrow. He says it looks more professional for the firm. He touches the back of my neck. His fingers are dry like parchment. He traces the hairline just for a second. Marcus is clearing the table. Marcus does not see. He walks to the door. He stops. He turns around and looks at the kitchen island. He walks back, picks up the linen towel, and straightens it on the oven handle. He aligns it perfectly with the edge of the metal. He looks at me and smiles. It is a small, tight smile. He knows I saw. He knows I did not fix it. He knows exactly where the line is, and he knows I have decided not to cross it. The door closes, the deadbolt clicks, I walk over to the oven, I look at the towel, it is terrifyingly straight. I reach out to mess it up, to reclaim some small corner of this room as my own. But my hand stops, I think about the mortgage payment due on the first, I think about the dark oak crib, I think about the bonus for family milestones, I leave the towel exactly where it is, I walk upstairs. I get into bed. The sheets are Egyptian cotton. They were a gift from him. They are crisp and cool. They feel like bandages. Marcus gets in beside me. He smells like the roast and the wine. He kisses my forehead and tells me he is proud of me. He says we are finally becoming the family he always dreamed of. I lie there in the dark. The house is silent, but then I hear it, a soft sound from downstairs. a floorboard creaking. Then another, it is rhythmic. It is someone walking through the living room. It is someone who knows where the furniture is. It is someone who does not need to turn on the lights. I do not wake Marcus. I do not move. I just stare at the ceiling. I think about the flaw in the diamond. I think about the way the light hits it. I think about how, if you look at it long enough, the flaw starts to look like the only real part of the stone. Everything else is just a distraction. I hear the stairs creak just once, near the top. I realize now why the smudge on the ring didn't come off. It wasn't an inclusion in the diamond. It was a mark on the inside of the band, a tiny engraved serial number. He didn't just give us a ring, he cataloged it, he tracked it, just like he's tracking the movement in this house right now. I close my eyes, I pretend to sleep. I wonder if this is what alignment feels like. It feels like disappearing. It feels like becoming a shadow in your own hallway. It feels like a gift you can never repay, because the currency is your life. If your father-in-law offered you a $5 million estate in exchange for your career and your privacy, would you be principled enough to say no and stay in a studio apartment? Or are you just lying to yourself because no one has ever offered you that much? Would you have done the same for half the price? Wouldn't you?